Light changed.
No, we had a the shadow was creating a frame
okay.
for the faces.
And you're taller.
Oh, there it is. Okay. All right, so if you then move the chair a little bit to the
come in if it's open.
No,
okay.
They're somewhere, they're right on to the underneath.
Okay.
Go ahead, say it. You had the mom look like you were going to say shash or something.
Yes.
what did you say the red house was like?
I can bring a shawl, I'm gonna die.
Okay, good afternoon, Mrs. Warren.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for agreeing to participate in this project. It will surely benefit the community now and into the future. The goal of this questionnaire is to produce a detailed and coherent narrative of your story, of your life, of your collection of experiences as possible. So in light of this, I encourage you to feel free not to worry about providing answers that are too in-depth or too long. That's what we want. I realize that you have already signed this consent form, but I also want you to know that you should feel free if there's any particular thing that you say during the course of the interview that you'd like us to keep out of the educational exhibition or presentation materials to be created based on these interviews. So you still have that option. So tell me about your place of birth and what was going on there as you were growing up.
Okay. I was born in Guyana, South America. For my life was maybe not the typical life because I lived with my grandparents and my parents lived in another part of the country because my father was assigned to set up a program, a mobile health unit, in the area that's sort of on the border with Venezuela. And when I was 3 years old, he was assigned to do that when I was one. When I was 3 years old, I went back to the city to live with my grandparents because my grandmother said my only grandchild, which I was at that point, is not growing up in the jungle center to me. And so I basically used to go to school. That was so that I would be in the city to go to school. So for the first 7 years of my life, I used to visit my parents on vacation, and I lived with my grandparents in the city. And my parents, and they were the fun people in those days because I would go to this jungle place where we'd run around without shoes. My brother, who's 2 years younger than I am, he got to live there and do all the cool things all the time. I lived in the city with my grandmother. But the cool things that I'm talking about, what they are really, was that part of my father's job was to spend 2 weeks out of every month in the launch, going through all the rivers in that area and finding the settlements of the Aboriginal Indians, where he had to provide the medical, he was setting up a medical service for them at that time, and make sure they got vaccinations, you know, the whole sort of thing. So my vacation time was always used to go with him. I got to go on the launch and go through all these different things. So that was, for me, something very special, and I consider that something very special in my grown-up years. Mm-hmm. When I was about seven, then my father was now transferred to the city, and so we got to live in the city for real, and I got to move from my grandparents to my parents on a full-time basis for 2 years, because after that my parents went to the States because my father's sight started going and they needed to see specialists. So we moved back again to my grandparents. So I sort of, we moved all over the place while I was little and did things that a lot of our friends did not do just because of the nature of that kind of life.
Like what kind of thing?
We traveled a lot. That was the nature of the thing. And when I said my father lived wherever, in order to get there, we had to take a steamer from Georgetown, the capital city. And it took, we left around noon, and we had cabins, and it got into where we were going the following morning. So we slept over on the steamer. And I do remember of one particular occasion that I thought was great. Usually I would travel to, the place was called Maparuma, where my parents were. I would travel there with my aunt who died last year. And I'm not quite sure that I remember why. It was one Christmas, I was around 5 years old. And she couldn't travel. But I was going to travel alone, which I remember feeling wonderful. Alone, not only alone, but I was going to travel on deck. Because we used to travel in cabins, but there were alternatives of traveling in deck chairs. People would just sit in deck chairs, and they would sleep in the deck chairs overnight, and that was it. And I always thought that would be the coolest thing to travel. Now, this journey, in order to get there, the steamers had to go out into the Atlantic Ocean to a certain point and then come back in. So there were points where it was very rough. I remember that. And that particular journey was very rough. Now, I'm saying I traveled alone, but I have to preface that there's no way my parents or grandparents would have sent me anywhere alone at 5 years old. I was in charge of somebody who I always, until very recently, thought was the captain of the ship. I recently found out he was not. He was not the captain. But he was supposed to make sure I stayed in my deck chair the whole time. Very good friends, as a matter of fact. His great nephew is now married to my sister. That's my, you know, small world sort of thing. But our families have been friends for like 3 generations. And very, very, very rough trip. I remember lying there and feeling nauseous. And I remember a lady saying, "What is this child doing on deck? Take her to my cabin." And I went to her cabin, and I don't remember, but my parents, and this was the teacher who was being assigned up there to Maparuma, and my parents became good friends. But I thought it was really cool. I thought it was midnight, and I remember feeling, and the steamer going, you know, it really would rock back and forth, really, really badly. And I was thinking, oh my God, I'm going to fall overboard. Yes. But this really, really nice lady, she took me in, and that to me, that was something special, because it combined my traveling alone, my traveling on deck, and then this really nice angel coming in, taking care of me. Yeah.
What was school like? How and who were your teachers?
Okay. School was, first of all, in every school I went to, which were that many, three schools in all, there was an aunt there. And two of them were the same aunt I'm telling you about, who also happened to live with my grandparents. She was the youngest sister, my mother's younger sister. So there was no homework excuse that I could possibly come up with that would work. School was, for me, I liked school. I really liked school. I was very, when vacations came, I always felt that, you know, what could I do other than, you know, what could I do that was equivalent to those kinds of things. The schools I went to were all girls' schools. I don't know if there was a reason for that. But for some reason, there was a primary school, it was all girls' schools, the secondary school was all girls' schools. And I didn't finish my secondary school there, I finished it in the States. Our schools were very strict. At those times, you could still get beaten. You got beaten for not doing well in an exam, so, that was a good incentive to work. However, that's primary school. My secondary school was a progressive secondary school. We got detentions instead of being beaten. And for me, in my mind, having a detention was way worse than getting beaten. Why? Because there were all kinds of detentions. There were detentions after school. There were Saturday detentions. Now, if you had on your uniform on a Saturday, and you drive right into school or walk to school or wherever you get to school, and the whole country knows you're in a detention. There's nothing you can say that would explain that otherwise. So to me, that was like the absolute worst thing, and I lived in deadly fear of having a detention. However, I had another aunt at that school, and that took care of that. No way I could have a detention. I'd have gotten killed by somebody along the way. Yeah. But it was very good, I think. And I think the school system was very good, which I never thought of while I was there, until I went to the States and I realized how much I was ahead of my age group, because I was placed according to age. Yeah. And in a lot of the things that I did. Yeah.
So. What were your favorite subjects?
My favorite subject was French, algebra, French algebra. I hadn't started doing science then, but I liked science. Math and algebra. I liked to read a lot, even though English as a subject wasn't necessarily my favorite. But I did like anything that required me to read.
Yeah. Who were your best friends? What were your favorite things to do together?
Okay. My best friend was Bridget Ford and Bridget Williams. Ridiculous, makes no sense. Yes. And two different schools. In primary, it was Bridget Ford. And it turns out that I didn't remember that I had known Bridget Ford when my father was up in the interior, because her father also had some kind of position there. And we were friends before we were 3 years old. And then I came to the city, and I guess she went somewhere. And we met and became friends, and neither one of us realized that we had known each other before then. And then when, we all go home, say, hey, there's this girl called Bridget, blah, blah, blah. And she said, yes, you know her, that sort of thing. And then when I went on to secondary, one of my best friends was Bridget Williams, which is incredible. I didn't know her before. We just became friends. Maybe we liked the name. I don't know. The kinds of things we would do together. Okay, in my times, we didn't get to hang out anywhere. You went home, and you went to school, and you went home. Or you did school activities, or you did... school extracurricular activities were planned by school or by a church or by or family friends parties. Those were your friends were the friends of your family. And as a matter of fact, up to today, it's kind of like that. I think that's how come my sister ends up being married to this guy because he's the child of the friends of the family. Those were the people you met. You didn't hang out in the corner. You didn't. You just didn't do that. Those are the things you did. I liked sports. Track and field. I didn't like running, but I was good at high jumping and broad jumping. That was the kind of stuff I did. So those are the extracurriculars that I liked. And, yeah. And also it was required by my high school. Yeah.
What aspect of the culture of Guyana do you remember most fondly?
I think the fact that it was so small compared to everything else everywhere else I've been to. There's a warmth, there's a protectiveness of, you know, that people, everywhere you go, somebody knows you or knows your name or knows your cousin or knows, and that hasn't happened to me since I left Guyana. I've been a foreigner, regardless of the fact that now I've lived out of Guyana more than I've lived there. I'm a foreigner, I'm a stranger, I'm not a part of any group, even though I may have an affinity to one or the other. But it's never the same. It's never the same thing.
Are there particular foods or music that you think about when you think of that?
Yeah, yes, I do. I think of anything with curry. Yes. I think of foods are very important because, and here I have to go back a little bit, family history. I spent those years with my grandmother as a very dominant influence. My grandmother spent her youth growing with her grandmother. Her grandmother came from Africa just after slavery ended. There was a little window there where they had indentured workers from Africa. So her grandmother and the two uncles. So they knew their names. They knew they were related. My mother refers to Uncle Yaba and Uncle Dips and Uncle Yashiba and whatever, because they had that relationship. But as a result, my grandmother knew how to prepare all those foods and had all these sayings and things that she got from that grandmother, right? Then, in addition to that, in Guyana, there's a very large Indian population, and where my grandmother grew up, there were a lot of Indians. And so she had the mixture of those two things as far as foods were concerned. Right? And so I miss that, and I haven't found the equivalent anywhere. Nowhere.
No. Full African. Full
Indian. Yeah.
So I'll say the question I was going to say, but you just answered some of it to you. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your parents and grandparents. What were they like? Where were they from?
Okay. My parents were from Guyana. My grandparents were from Guyana. However, I have to preface the part about my grandparents. On my mother's side, my maternal grandfather died very young. I never knew him. So I had a maternal other grandfather who never thought of me as anything other than his first grandchild. I was the first in the family, and his family was from Barbados. Yeah, so they came from Barbados. But the others on my mother's side, my grandparents were from. My grandmother was from Guyana. My grandfather, he was from Guyana, but his parents came from Barbados. My grandmother's parents, her mother was from Guyana, her father was from England. And I couldn't go back anymore. I couldn't go back further on my mother's side. On my father's side, my father can go back to the slave. All the way. It was five generations that we had a family reunion about 10 years ago, about that. And they can trace the family all the way down to Nayashir, my daughter, and his line, right? And they even know the name of that slave, or the name he used. It's one name. So I don't know. But the African name, the official papers, all the English or Dutch or whatever names, or they're all Welsh, or the three lines got mixed in there. And but the African name that they called him by, they knew that name. And we even have some land in Guyana on my father's side, and a will, which we are afraid to touch now because it's falling apart, which was given to that, I guess must have been the first free slave woman, for her children, which she had by the Dutch guy, right? And he left a land, and there was a cow called Betsy, and I mean, there was this really elaborate will with all the drawings and the things and that, and the calligraphy and whatever. Really, really beautiful. Yeah. So that was my father's side, coming on that. And my father's the historian in the family, because he really made a point that as we grew up, of telling us all the different stories about, you know, the different members of the family and what happened and so forth.
What do you think is the impact on you and others in the family on having this knowledge?
I think it makes a big difference. I think it makes us feel grounded, if that's the word. It's only 5 generations, but it's more than lots of people have. And then, you know, when I look at the other parts of my family, it doesn't exist after you go back 1 or 2, and then it gets very fuzzy. Nobody knows really what happened there. Yeah.
When you say grounded, what do you mean?
As if I knew where I came from. And I know why I feel that way too. Just before we were going to leave Guyana to go to the States, my father took us upriver to meet the family that we didn't know. I knew my grandfather because he used to come to our house, come to the city all the time to visit us. But they were aunts and uncles and cousins. And so we took another steamer. This wasn't a sleepover steamer. It takes about half a day to get there. And we're going by, and my father looks at the, and he said, okay, there's the house. And they have the curtains up because they're expecting us. And that house was the house that existed since slavery. It used to be on a one level, but it was now 2 levels. I remember there was long stairs to go up, and there was a creek that came by, Catabuli Creek it was called. And all the kids, and Guyana is known for people who don't know to swim, however, anybody who came from that area swim before they walk. And my father's an expert swimmer.
Yeah.
And, so when I say grounded, it was like there's this place. Then he took us to the back of the house. There are all these burial plots, because at one time people buried their people at the back of the house. And there was Grace Van Groningen. My name's Grace, Bridget Harmon Grace. And he said, there's always a Grace in the family, and that's why you were called Grace. And then when Nayashi was born, I wanted the same thing, but I wanted an African name. And it turns out her name means Grace also. So it was good. And there were like 3 Graces there at the back, there in the house. And then we went to visit. There was a great aunt of mine living there at the time. She was in her 90s. And she got up every morning and went down to the well to get water. I mean, it was incredible. And as I said, the house was now raised, so there was this long set of stairs that she walked with her bucket down, and she went to the Catabuli Creek to get, you know, whatever. And they would bathe there, and they would, it made me feel grounded doing that.
You mentioned the profession of your father. What were the professions of the other, parents?
Yeah, parents? Well, I should say what my father was. People hear me speak and think he was a doctor. He was not a doctor in the sense that we know a doctor right now. I think the official term they had at that time was a sick nurse dispenser. It was like a nurse practitioner who was also a pharmacist and whatever, because I know he made vaccines. He did minor surgery, you know, wherever there were doctors, people like my father were trained to go, and they had those functions. That was it. My mother was a nurse. My grandmother was a housewife, but she wanted to be a teacher. That is my mother's mother, but in those days her mother said she would get cough if she became a teacher. Cough was tuberculosis. Yes. There's a story with my grandmother. My grandmother was a very special person. She had one sister. And her sister was very dark, she was very light. She was able to get a job in a store, which was a big deal in her time, because of her skin color. And I think she even might have worked there for a short time, but her mother said, no, you can't work anywhere that your sister can't work. And she took her out of that. Of course, in those days, parents had those powers. They said, you can't do these things. I don't know how old she would have been at that time, but she obeyed her mother. And so she said, well, in the village that I lived in, there were two choices. You could work in the match factory, or you could, I forget what the other thing was. And she said, I had decided that I was not going to do any of those things. So she had some things of life. She had godparents who had left her, what she told me, they left me a house. I've been in that area, I haven't seen the house, but I'm assuming this house couldn't be much more than a shack, right? She said, well, they left me a house, so I rented out my house, and I decided I would become a dressmaker. And I saved up money until I could get a machine, and I became a dressmaker. She was one of the best dressmakers around. And I say she's a very special person because that's her beginning. All of them, on both sides, that's the kind of beginning there. Nobody was rich, nobody had money. But there comes my mother. My mother became a nurse. My aunt became a teacher. This is the one I lived with. And I had another aunt, and I have another aunt, who she was a telephone operator. But she told me that was the most wonderful thing to be. And, you know, that's what she wanted to be. And if you learn my telephone operator. Now, at this time, we were still living in the village in the interior. But after my mother started to work, I guess she must have started to work. They decided they were going to all move to the city. So, the whole family, my grandfather, my mother, and the three sisters, or just three sisters, they moved to Georgetown and started their life. But I keep wondering about my mother's decision to become a nurse. Because at that time, you couldn't work as a nurse if you were married. You could work as a teacher, and I think a lawyer, something weird like that. There was a law. She couldn't work as a nurse. So I said, no. She had to go through the whole training. You go to high school, and then there's a post-high school. They didn't call it college. It was like three years beyond high school. And anyway, she did that. At the time that my father was doing the, she couldn't officially work with him. She did it unofficially. But she couldn't get paid for it, whatever. At the end of the 7, 8 years, whatever, that they finished, she'd finished that tour, then the law changed. And she began to work officially as a married person, legally. But that was how it was in those days. The aunt that I lived with was a teacher. When I was born, she had just graduated from teacher's training college. So I got the benefits of all of her experiments. And I went everywhere with her, and people, there were people who thought I was her daughter, that she didn't want to admit to the fact that I was her daughter, because I was an illegitimate daughter, because there's no way I could be up and down all over the place with her, and I looked a little bit like her. That they just assumed that, okay, they're just pretending. Yes, that was it. On my father's side, I told you what he was, this sick nurse dispenser, that it would be like a nurse practitioner and a pharmacist and whatever they needed in the medical field, wherever. That's the training that people in those times got. At that time, Guyana did not have a university. And if you were lucky and you got the one scholarship to go to the University of the West Indies, there was one for a boy, one for a girl, then you could go there and do these other things, or go to England, or which is what people would have done. Either the West Indies or England. A little later on, like in my time, people started going more to the States, but it was the West Indies or England.
Yeah.
For higher education. Hmm. My step-grandfather, when I knew him, in my time, he was a clerk. However, he told me he used to be a cyclist. I don't know what that means. You race bicycles? I'm not quite sure what that means. And at some point, I think he used to drive. I'm putting bits and pieces together here. When I was very little, my grandparents had a car. Now, it makes no sense that they should have a car. I'm suspecting that he used to be a chauffeur for somebody. And that at one point, they actually bought that car. When it, you know, because when I used to go with my aunt to school, when she was doing her teacher's, right after training college, where you do your practice teaching sort of thing, she used to drive that car. And then after that, there was no car. So I think that was a car that may have been given to him, or he bought it secondhand, or whatever. I'm assuming that he used to be a chauffeur for somebody. I never thought to ask about that. Just until recently, I said, where did that car come from? I have no idea. Because there were very few cars in Guyana at that time. Very few. You had to be rich to have a car. Didn't make sense. People went around on bicycles.
Yeah.
Now, my father's side, his father was many things. One of them was the captain of those steamers that went around.
Yeah.
At the time that I knew him, in my lifetime, he was in charge of opening the dikes that let the water in and out, the water that came up the Demerara River to go out to the ocean. So, you know, he had to know the tides and this and that, and he'd be getting up in the middle of the night to go and open and close these gates. But that's what he did in my time that I knew him. But he used to do a lot. He spent a lot of time as a captain, my father told me. But they did lots of things. The people who lived in the interior, they had to find ways of living, and they found ways of living. My mother's father, not my her stepfather, her father, there's a word they use in Guyana called the pork knocker. These are the people going to the bush and pan for diamonds and I don't know what else they do. Those kinds of things, you know. They live a free life, they don't work for anybody, they go find gold and diamonds and whatever else they do in those places. Yeah. Other than that, I can't think of any other sort of. There were lots of teachers among the older people.
So you felt like you were aware of all of these different jobs, yeah. And how did knowing all of them have an effect affect you as a young person coming up?
At the time that I knew it, I didn't think it was affecting me. I feel like I, in retrospect, I can see that it affected me. At the time, I can't say that I was consciously being affected. Yeah.
Did your parents or grandparents have particular mantras that they constantly repeated to you as a guide for your behavior and our approach to life?
Oh my gosh. Oh dear, yes. There was one, as a black person, you always had to work extra hard so that you could do well. Education was, I mean, the be-all and the end-all of everything. You have to have it. You have to find a way to have it. I don't know. You just have to have it. One of the reasons that the decision was made to go to the States was that I was getting to the age where I would be soon going off to university. And we were having physical problems in Guyana. We were missing school. These children are out of school. And it coincided with, I think I mentioned one point that my parents went because my father was losing his sight. he ended up losing his sight. He's blind today. But his position gave him one month's vacation paid for the whole family to go to England and back, something like that. I'm assuming that at some point in time this used to be when the English, we were still an English colony, but there was some point in time where only English people occupied these kinds of positions. However, since he was losing his sight and had never taken vacation since we knew him, it turned out he had like a year's vacation accumulated. So they decided, okay, this is time to go and see what can be done about his life, because in Guyana there was nothing more that could be done. So they decided to go to the States and not to England. They didn't take us. They didn't take the children. And while they were there, it was the time where in the States they were having, well, they're still having a shortage of nurses. And they were giving out green cards to any nurse that walked by just about. And my mother got a green card and didn't plan to use it. Because there was no reason we felt that we particularly wanted to. He said, okay, I'll take it. So they went, whatever, they did his eyes, nothing. There wasn't anything they could do for him. What can be done today couldn't be done at that time. And so, anyway, they came back. And it was a week before the green card would have lapsed. And in that year, things really went south in Guyana. And my mother said, you know what, I'm going back. She left us. My mother, who would be, we would call the most reserved or the most timid of the three sisters, you know, she left her children, her husband, and she went back to the States because of that education thing. She said, my children have to get educated. What am I going to do? I don't know what's going on. It doesn't look like this is getting any better. And effectively, it got a whole lot worse. So she made a good decision. As I recall, we didn't like it when we went there. It was a whole other life that we didn't particularly care for, but it made a big difference in our lives. Okay. So that's getting back to what they like, education.
Yeah. Would you mind sharing a particular instance when you did something that made them feel that you especially needed to have adhered to the mantra? So any time where you, whether they were there saying it to you or it was replaying in your head where you heard it?
You know, I think it's difficult to separate what they wanted you to do from what you wanted to do. And I think it's not until maybe very, very recently that I found myself saying, okay, I'm doing this because I want to do it. And it becomes so much a part of you. It's part of your culture. It's part of your creed, your way of living, I think, that you hear it so much. I can think of doing something that as I was doing it, I knew that it wouldn't be like it was such a minor, ridiculous thing that anybody else hearing it would say, well, what's the big deal, right? But I think in general, no. I think I lived by their creed.
Yeah. So what types of music did you grow up hearing? Who were your favorite singers and what were your favorite songs?
Okay, there was calypso. There was country and western. I don't think you can grow up in the West Indies without liking country and western. There was the blues, Benny King, Black and Cole, who else in those days? Brooke Benton, people like that, right, that were on the radio. Those were the people of the hit parade, but they were there equally with Calypso and Country and Western. I mean, 1, 2, and 3 could be any one of those. Yes.
Tell me more about that connection with country. How popular was country music in Guyana, and why do you think it was so popular?
I don't even think people were aware that it was country music. I think I don't see a whole big difference between country and calypso. It's even stories. And that's what they are, stories about life. And that's why I think it clicked. And it's funny, I've run into Africans who are not the same thing. And then we say this to Black Americans, and they look at us really strangely. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
What were your favorite games to play?
My favorite games. Okay, I was a reader, so I like to read. But in sports, it was broad jump and long jump. And I wasn't good at any other things that that girls did. Jacks, I hated it. That was about the only thing I can even remember. But you see, what I really liked was when we went up to my room and we go into the woods, and it was me and my brother on the compound that we lived. There were about 7 children. I was the only girl. And so I got to do all these boy things. And we would go into the woods, and we would pick stuff, and we would have encounter with snakes, and all these things. Those are the things I liked. Yeah.
What were your favorite? What are your favorite foods?
I would eat curried paper, but besides that, anything curried, there's something that's typically Guyanese, not West Indian. It's pepper pot, the Guyanese pepper pot, which is made with the extract of the cassava, right? And it's from the Aboriginal Indian thing, but it's in Guyana, it's a Christmas dish, and to me that was special. I mean, I guess it had certain. It connects me with Christmas and all that goes on with Christmas. Christmas for us also was garlic pork. And in Guyana, that didn't come out of Africa, that came out of Portugal, because that was the Portuguese dish that became Christmas for us. It's still Christmas. Things like ginger beer and sorrel, yes. Anything, what we call ground food, cooked in coconut milk. Oh, I'm beginning to taste it. That kind of stuff. Yes, those are my favorite foods.
What were your favorite cultural figures or heroes as a child? What do you remember or know about them?
I think there's a thing about living in a country where you're a majority. You don't think about those things. The cultural figures that I think about were external to Guyana. In Guyana, this was just us, that we were everything. We were the richest people and the poorest people and the people in between. And I can't say that there was any person or personality that in cultural terms I considered, you know, to be that way. They were individuals that I considered, but it had nothing to do with it in cultural terms. In cultural terms, I think we were influenced a lot by the Black American figures that were. Yeah, we were influenced by what was going on in South Africa. We were, I guess, being a small country too. We looked outwards a lot. We were conscious of other countries. We were conscious of the fact that at that time in Australia, if you were Black, you couldn't go there. You know, those are the kinds of things. You couldn't travel to Australia. And Good.
Have you ever heard of Louise Bennett or the Mighty Sparrow?
The Mighty Sparrow I grew up with. I can't figure out how I grew up, but he must have been a kid when he was singing. But Louise Bennett, I heard of later because the tendency in Guyana with a linkage more to Trinidad, Tobago, Barbados, and what we call the small islands, Grenada, whatever, you know, we all had family somewhere there, that kind of thing. And Jamaica was kind of those people, bad people at that, but, you know, over on the side, you know. It was a closer cultural myth. I learned about Louise Bennett after.
Did you have any contact, before you moved there, did you have any contact with U.S. or British culture as a youth? What do you remember about them?
I had contact with, well, British culture was just part of everyday living. We were still part of the colony, part of the British Empire. My father got a medal from the Queen for the work he did at that place in Macarua. American culture I knew very little of, other than there was one period of time where things had gotten a little bit tight. And I remember my grandmother renting her house out to an American who I think worked at the consulate or something. And that was the first time I had actually talked to an American. He was a black American. Yeah. From the South, with a Southern accent. And we had all the prejudices against Americans in general and from the South that happens when you grow up in a British colony.
Such as?
No, you know, you think, oh no, these people are definitely inferior. But as we got to know him, of course, as you get to know people, you realize that these are just prejudices that make no sense. Right? And this is a very, very nice person then. That was it. And with the British, well, there were, you know, English people around. Not a whole lot, because a lot of people might have thought, because the British didn't settle in large numbers again. They were there, yes. But it wasn't in large numbers. They sort of tended to send what they considered the lesser people, the Irish and the Welsh and the Scots, to Guyana. And we still had the leftovers of some of the French, because Guyana at one time was French, another time was Dutch. It was, well, the part that my father is from used to be part of Suriname, so it once belonged to Dutch. So in that area, there are a lot of Dutch names. That's why my name is a Dutch name. So, and even in the spoken language, there's a lot of French and Dutch words that we use. We don't speak it the way we speak English, but there we say bateau, for we call the boat a bateau. You know, so it's a bateau, as it says, and a wharf is a stelling, which is a Dutch word for wharf, things like that.
Did your parents or grandparents ever have to or choose to migrate from one place to another?
My parents and grandparents migrated to the States.
What prompted them to do that?
I think it was just what I mentioned. They wanted a better life because there were political situations developing in the country. And for my parents, it was for education. For my grandparents, it became a while where they were the only ones left. And they wanted to be with the rest of the family.
Did they find the culture of the place to which they moved to be different from the culture of the place from which they moved? What did they tell you about the experience?
They found it very different. I don't think my grandparents ever got to like it because it was, you know, just a whole different life. I wouldn't say I'm going to divide my parents because in the case of my father, when, as I told you, my mother went ahead and then we went later. My father waited until he retired, because he could retire early because of his sight. Now, in his case, he went and got training for the blind, which he probably would not have been able to get that kind of training in Guyana. So that's a whole other reason to be in the States. My mother thought she had to do it for us and for our education. And she saw it as a very positive thing, because she saw it as giving us other possibilities, more possibilities in the future.
Did they talk with you about the kind of cultural confrontations that they experienced, what their experience was like as coming from one culture and encountering this other culture?
Yes, they did. More so my mother, who was in the workplace. It was good and it was bad. First of all, she had three things that she talked about constantly. People who reacted to her name, Van Groningen, because they didn't expect her. She had a nursing degree that was under the English system, so she automatically was recognized in the U.S. And she ran into a bit of problems with certain people because of that. Because the U.S. had a thing that if you came with an English training, they automatically accepted you. We were still a colony. It was English training. So it was automatically accepted. So she ran into things like that. But I think my mother and father's generation, they had a group. Because, first of all, I had mentioned this, Guyana lost its entire middle class around that time. It's supposedly the only country in the world that lost population. I can't think of any country that population goes down. And what happened with them in particular is that they had a support group. They had people who told them what to do. What is the best place to go? Where is the best place to do this? If you want to buy a house, do this. And I think that they had much more of a support group than my generation, my brother, sister, myself. And mostly my generation, because I was the one in between, where I knew way a lot about what we came from. And I didn't particularly like what we were in. And there was no support group in that group of people. My brother and sister who were younger, well, they went to school and they came up through the system, and so to them that's the new reality. I knew I didn't want to go to a certain kind of college. I knew I wanted to go away to school. And I always thought I would go back to Guyana. It was never that I would go back right away. I knew there were a lot of positive things that I got out of going to the States. But still, I didn't feel at home. I don't think I've ever felt at home the way my brothers and sisters did.
What did your parents or grandparents not like about the U.S.?
I think it was a cultural difference, a big cultural shock to deal with the U.S. I think that was it more than anything else. It was an economic difference that didn't even make sense. Because they made more money, but she seemed to live at a lower level. Those kinds of things. Those are the differences that they really, really didn't like. And also, when you come from some place where you have generations behind you, you know the people around you, and then you're suddenly in a place where you know nobody. It's different. Even with the, as I said, I do think that they had that group that supported them. And even now, my father, who's 95, and lots of his friends have died, but their children and grandchildren go visit him. I mean, that group is still there, Yeah.
What did they think about the U.S. before they went there? What ideas, perceptions did they have before?
again, you're going, you have to look at it from the point of view that you're coming from a British colony. And so at that time still, the focus that if you were going anywhere, you were going to England, right? And the U.S. was sort of a slightly lower level of place to go. It had all the positives that you heard about, but there were all these negatives that you heard in the news, you know. And so I think that affected them. I think their impression of that changed after they lived in the States, and then they probably acquired a more positive outlook on living in the States once they were there. But it was not that way before they were there. The reason they went was for my father's eyes, really. Yeah.
Did they maintain the culture of Guyana? And if yes, what did they do that leads you to say that?
Oh, I think that we definitely, after this generation, have maintained the culture of Guyana. I remember telling my sister that the government was going to throw her out of the country if they knew that for Thanksgiving she was going to have pepper pot and curry, whatever, and you know, that sort of thing. No, we definitely maintained the culture, yes. And I say that, and I have a nephew, yeah. It's my cousin's child, I guess, what, second cousin, I'm saying, a nephew. And I hear him speak. And this child was born in the United States. And I say, oh my goodness, how is this possible, you know? And his mother went there when she's 3 years old. But he's more Guyanese than I ever was. So something is being maintained. Something is being maintained. And even if we maintain it outside of Guyana, because we haven't gone back a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Because my aunt, who is living in Canada, all her friends are from Guyana. We have reunions, family reunions, and you know, we're all Guyanese somewhere. Some part of the world we get together.
So there's a way in which the pockets that
That's
are
right.
end up in some way being
right.
stronger.
That's right. That's right. I think so. Yeah.
So what made you decide to migrate to Panama?
You know, I wasn't even conscious that I was migrating at the time. I got married to a Panamanian. And as I said, when I went to the States, I always thought I would go back to Guyana or I'd go anywhere. I thought I liked the idea of going somewhere. And I got married to a Panamanian, and it sort of, you know, made sense. And he always said to me, I never, ever planned to stay in the States, ever. And so it was a logical move just to come here. Planes do go in both directions if things don't work out, but I wasn't, as I said, let me migrate. You know, it wasn't that. It was...
It wasn't the same as when
no,
you were
No, it wasn't the same, no.
What did you know about Panama before your first visit?
I knew my husband, and you know, if you know my husband, he didn't tell me a whole lot. I knew what I read. I knew the Isthmus of Panama. I knew about the Panama Canal just from history. I knew that there was a consul to Guyana. I knew there was some relationship between Guyana and Panama because my father had told me about him and he told me about his name. And, but not much, really. Very, very, very little.
What tell me a bit about your first visit or your first trip to Panama. What was it like? What do you remember most about it? What image of Panama stuck in your mind after that visit?
Okay, my first visit is when I came to live. Yes. I didn't come and check it out and go back. Yes. I came with all the things I owned and I was here. Yeah. What surprised me was that how American the West Indians here were. That was very, very surprising to me. I remember when I couldn't believe that they celebrated Thanksgiving. Until I said, well, of course it makes sense that they work in the zone, and that, you know, that makes total sense. But that was one of the things that really shocked me, is I said, you celebrate Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay, you know.
it was very, very strong. And I shouldn't say that, because not all Americans, not all West Indians had that American influence. But that was the one, that was the influence that I saw right away as soon as I got here.
Yeah, it was a little bit. Yeah. What did it make? Yeah. Questions for you then about what Panamanian culture was.
Yeah, well, I considered lucky because I didn't speak any Spanish at the time that I came here, and I was hired at the university with no Spanish, but it meant a total immersion into the culture. So my husband says sometimes, he says, I think you know more about the culture than I do, and in certain ways that's quite true, because he has never had a comparable experience. He has never lived or worked totally within the Panamanian culture. And I did it. To me, it was just another culture to go into, and there'll be differences and things that are different from what I know and whatnot. I like the idea of learning another language. I always liked languages. And,
mm-hmm. How would you characterize your experience here overall?
Overall, I would say it was a positive experience. The only time that I questioned whether I'd made a correct decision was during the Noriega period, when I was saying, I wondered, should I send my daughter back to the States to go to school, what should I say for school? Am I going to be running for the second time in my life? I did think that. That was the only time that I thought that. And we decided not to. We decided to stick out. Yeah.
What are your favorite things about being here?
I think you can live the quality of life is better once you've gotten over a very important hump. There are a whole lot of people who don't make it over that hump. Once you have, I think the quality of life is better.
What do you not like?
I think the things I don't like are probably things that are just purely cultural and have no basis in anything. You just don't like it because you know something else, something that's different. It doesn't mean it's worse or better. And I don't know. I think possibly people are the same everywhere and in some way, And it's just that you like your bad stuff better than you like their bad stuff,
How would you compare your life here to your life in the U.S.?
My life in the U.S., I don't think it would be fair to compare it, because I spent all my life in the U.S. as a student. I went all the way through to my PhD. I was a student. I didn't live in the U.S. My brothers and sisters lived in the U.S. and worked in the U.S. and whatever. My daughter lived and worked. I never did. So it's a different, it's not a fair comparison. Here I lived as an adult, dealing with adult things. Over there I never tried to buy a house.
How would you compare your experiences as a person of primarily African descent here to your experience as a person of primarily African descent in Guyana and or the United States?
Okay. First of all, in Guyana, as I said, when you're a majority, you don't really pay much attention to it. I knew it was African descent. We talked about it in our family, but it wasn't as big a deal as it became as a state. And then in the States, I went to school, I went to university, at the time when Black Power and all this was coming into fore. And I do remember one occasion, one of my professors saying to me, I never thought of you as being black. And I kind of looked at him and I said, well, what did you think I was? Chinese? I don't know. There were things like that sometimes it depended on who it came from and how and what spirit it was sent. It would bother me, or it would not, because sometimes it's just ignorance that the person does not know, just does not know. All right. People, I was told once, you don't have a real black accent. You know, those are the things that come up in the United States. And again, I said, you know, depending how tired I was at the moment, I would get angry or I would just be understanding of, okay, what do I do with this? You know. It was, maybe, going to the States, I guess, makes everybody be more, everybody who's not white, maybe if you, well, I can't speak for people who are white, let's not say that. If you are any of the different diverse range of what blackness is, and you go to the States, you know it sometime or the other. Whether it's by a question like, I never thought of you as being black, obviously you thought of this person being something that you're not, or you wouldn't make that comment, right? Or something, regardless of that happens there. But I've had the same thing happen to me here. I have, yes, where I remember at work, someone said, same thing, I never thought of you as being black. And I said, so what did you think I was? And she said, mulatto. I said, well, you know, I think of that, I don't think they use that word anymore, but that's being black also, you know, that means there are black genes in there. And so I think, you know, people try to understand themselves by making these kinds of comments. And what's to do about that?
What specific message do you want to send or communicate to the younger Panamanians about your cultural background?
I think I would like to know that younger Panamanians appreciate their cultural background. And once they do that, and I sometimes feel that they don't quite. Once they do that, they can appreciate any other. Once they're comfortable with their own.
For sure. How did you feel the first time you landed in the U.S.?
Oh, boy. I do remember that. I was very excited to go to the U.S., but I would be excited to go to any other place. I was very excited to go. I was going to see my mother for the first time in over a year. So that was kind of good. And my aunt, when they both came to meet us. And I do remember making in my mind a comparison of a black and white movie and a color movie. And I was thinking that, in a way, the things in Guyana were like black and white movies, and when you came to the States, you saw all these colors. It was a color movie. I do remember thinking that. It was interesting. And my brother, sister, and I, we travel by ourselves, I remember, to go.
What were your expectations about what life there would be like?
I think it's easy to say what I didn't expect. I ended up finishing high school at a public high school, and I come from a private school in Guyana. That was a shock. That was my biggest culture shock in the States. Yeah. I think that's when I thought that I really don't like this place. Yes. And my brother, I remember, who was accustomed to running wild up in the forest and came to a city and couldn't go to the park because my mother didn't feel the park was safe. He didn't like that. My little sister was just nice, and she liked everything. My biggest culture shock was school, but at the same time, I think school gave me the most opportunities for everything that came after. I was in what might be not the best of schools, but I ran into the best of teachers. and the best of advisors and the best of, I just think it made a big difference in my life.
What created the culture shock, or what particular things do you mean when you say culture shock?
There were no knives in my school in Miami. Things like that. Yes.
Did you find a community there? If so, what was the background of that community?
I didn't find a community. I don't think so. I think the community of friends that I found happened in college. As a matter of fact, those are the friends I'm going to be meeting in 2 weeks. Yeah.
How would you characterize your interaction with the natives of the U.S. overall?
Okay, there are so many types of natives. I think my overall, it was a positive interaction. Overall, it was a positive interaction. Overall, it was an interaction that made a difference in my life in lots of ways. And I remember there was a teacher, I didn't like her, and she went out of her way to do something that ended up getting me a scholarship, you know. It was things like that. There were all these conflicting things that were happening. And this is somebody I didn't like her. She didn't do anything to me. I just didn't like her. Yes. Yeah. Overall, it was positive. But I don't think I felt I was going there to go somewhere else, to go and, you know, to learn about this new place and whatever. And I was willing to go somewhere else to learn about that new place too. That's what I came to.
Yeah. How do you define yourself in terms of cultural, racial, or ethnic identity?
Okay. I never thought I would have to make a big deal of saying I'm a Caribbean person until I came to Panama, because people keep saying West Indian, and I say I'm not West Indian. But I consider myself as a black person. Culturally, I'm Caribbean. There's no way I can say that that's not it. And I've had experiences in different parts of the world that probably have added to that. So.
Do you ever feel yourself to be caught or be between multiple identities or cultures, and if so, in what ways or what moments or circumstances?
I don't think so. I feel that whatever culture I am, I don't feel a conflict.
How did you meet your husband?
I met my husband at university. We were there, we met. 2 years later, we were going. I went to grad school, we went to a job, we got married, I was in grad school, we came here.
No romantic story that you want to share.
I can give a story, it's not a romantic story. So tell me about Panama. What do people eat in Panama? He told me soup. Now that's so typically my husband, I don't know.
Do you have children? How old are they, and where were they born?
I have one child. She is probably older than she wants me to say. They were born in Panama. She's in there, just over 30. Mm-hmm. Born in Panama.
Mm-hmm. Does she consider herself West Indian or something else?
I think she considers herself West Indian, Panamanian, Latin American. In college, she was accused of being a spy by all three groups.
Is there any other information that you want to include that we have not yet touched upon?
I don't think so. If anything, I'll let you know.
Okay, well then, thank you again for participating. Please feel free to contact us if you have any questions or wish to add to your contribution.
I will.
All right, thank you.
Aren't you supposed to be sleeping?
Sure.